Sukadeva Goswami said to Maharaj Parikshit, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, after being seen in his transcendental form, instructing Brahmaji, the leader of the living entities, disappeared." Now I'll read it again. Sukadeva Goswami said to Maharaj Parikshit, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, after being seen in his transcendental form instructing Brahmaji, the leader of the living entities, disappeared." So pretty much in the purport, Prabhupada is taking these words, just one after another, and giving like, you know, a more robust explanation of them, probably just following the acharyas. Okay, next slide, number 5. Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, it is clearly mentioned that the Lord is Ajanaha, or the Supreme Person. That's the question we have there. Ajanaha, but we say like, what's what we say? Nirguna, which the impersonalists say that he has no gunas, no qualities. But we say no material qualities. And Ajanaha means no people, which is translated in Sanskrit several times as desolate or devoid of people, like that, you know, Ajanaha. So it's interesting. Let's say we're in a very, sophisticated level of philosophy in Sanskrit here. Okay. And that he was showing his transcendental form, Atmano Rupam, to Brahmaji while instructing him in the summarization of Srimad Bhagavatam in 4 verses. In this verse, it is clearly mentioned that the Lord is Ajanaha, or the Supreme Person, and that he was showing his transcendental form, Atmano Rupam, to Brahmaji while instructing him in the summarization of Srimad Bhagavatam in 4 verses. He is Ajanaha, or the Supreme Person, amongst Jananam, which is the next word, or all persons. All living entities are individual persons, and amongst all such persons, Lord Hari is supreme, as confirmed in the Shruti Mantra, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam. Okay. So we have a very kind of tight argument, you know, being presented by Prabhupada, by the Acharyas. They're very much concerned with this point of establishing that Krishna is a person, and he's a supreme person. And Ajana Janaha. And here we have, after that, we have Nityo Nityanams. Chaitanash Chaitananam. Okay. So he's not only Nityo Nityanam and Chaitanash Chaitananam, but he's Ajana Jananam. Again and again, he's understood by comparing him to the other living entities. And this, of course, is, this is Katha Upanishad, and 2.2.13. And as the Katha Upanishad, which is going to be, it's divided into two parts, as I remember. So that therefore it has, you know, first, this is the second part of the Katha Upanishad. And the second part, that's divided into parts. And so with the second part of the second part, verse number 13, like that. And of course, it's a mantra that Prabhupada and Sancharya cite repeatedly in Bhagavad Gita. It's right there. And it's easy to remember the text number, because it's double trouble for the Maya bodies. 2.2.13, like that. So Prabhupada's quoting it here also to establish that who is Krishna. But he's going beyond just that he's the supreme person amongst people, the outstanding person amongst people, to talk about actually that he's eternal, and also he's conscious. So we go to the next slide, which is number 6. Then we see, so there is no place for impersonal features in the transcendental world. Aha. As there are impersonal features in the material world. Whenever there is chaitana, or knowledge, the personal feature comes in. Yeah. So, of course, this is, again, nityo nityanam, chaitanas chaitananam. chit, was that? Cetodarpanamarjanam, right in the beginning, Shastaka. Cheta, chitta, it means consciousness. Prabhupada says here knowledge, but Prabhupada also says that sometimes memory passes for knowledge, like that. So if I have certain ideas, then I know. It's just like if I have certain things, I'm rich, or I'm guilty of being a thief. If I possess certain things, so I possess certain thoughts. Some of my thoughts I call memories, which is the things that happened in the past, and some of my thoughts I call plans, like that. But I give different names to my different thoughts. But here, knowledge is not being equated so much with the, what do you call it, with possessing thoughts, but actually with being aware, you know, being silent. I'm conscious of my thoughts. I'm conscious of my tongue, belly, and genitals. And what else can I be conscious of? So Chaitanya, yeah, probably right from the very beginning, is beginning to identify this as a real feature of what it means to be a person. Because the question, we talk about personalism and impersonalism, but what do we mean by being a person? Well, Krishna is Gopi Jana Balaba, Radharani's hair is curly, you know. She's hiding out from her husband, her mother-in-law, who's pot-bellied. Yeah. But at least here, I mean, it's kind of very general, the first feature we're concerned with in talking about, you know, Brahma being a person and Krishna being a person is that they're conscious. And it's very natural because matter, in some respects, we may say it exists, sat, you know, but does it really exist? Apparently, Sankhya philosophers, the atheistic Sankhya philosophers, and I think Kundalini people, other people, they think, even Buddhists, that the material world always exists or something like that, you know. And even the modern scientists, they try to also give some kind of like permanent existence to matter, you know, like that. But our point is that, you know, maybe the first thing of being a person is that he exists, you know, sat eternally. And then he's conscious. Okay. So there's no place for impersonal features in the transcendental world as there are impersonal features in the material world. Whenever there is chaitanya or knowledge, the personal feature comes in. So matter is not conscious. If it's conscious, then the personal feature is already there. In the spiritual world, everything is full of knowledge. Okay, consciousness. And therefore, everything in the transcendental world, the land, the water, the tree, the mountain, the river, the man, the animal, the bird, everything is of the same quality, namely chaitanya. And therefore, everything is individual and personal. So, I was going through this. What we got here? The transcendental, the land, okay, Vrindavan, the water, okay, maybe the river Jamuna, the trees, Kalpavriksha trees, the mountain, Govardhan, the river, also Jamuna, the man, Krishna's friends, the animal, Krishna's cow, the bird, Tandavika, Krishna's peacock, you know, yeah. But also it's interesting, the land, okay. Because we're jumping up and down and dancing in Vrindavan, you know, the land is like a person, you know, we're massaging it, and it's massaging us, you know, supplying different kinds of things so our feet hit different kinds of things and are stimulated in different ways like that, yeah. You know. Lots of grains of sand cooperating, you know. So everything there is conscious. Spiritual world, everything is full of knowledge, and therefore everything is transcendental world. Yeah. Is an individual person. Okay? Next slide. Number 7. Srimad Bhagavatam gives us this information as a supreme Vedic literature. It was personally instructed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to Brahmaji, so that the leader of the living entities, and of course that was Parameshti, was in the text. So Prabhupada, after going back to this consciousness, is kind of coming back to the text again and pointing out, you know, the Srimad Bhagavatam was given to Brahma, you know, who is the leader of all living entities, so that he might broadcast the message to all in the universe, to all in the universe, in order to teach the supreme knowledge of bhakti yoga. Brahmaji in his turn instructed Narada, his beloved son, the same message of Srimad Bhagavatam, and Narada in his turn taught the same to Vyasadeva, who again taught it to Sukadeva Goswami, It's a parampara. One thing that comes to mind is that, you know, Brahmaji probably wouldn't do very well on the Sankirtan report. He only distributed one book like that. I guess even Vishnu wouldn't do too well because he only distributed one small book like that. It's interesting that there's, of course, Brahmaji may need many other disciples, other students also. But on the other hand, okay, it's coming down like this. Let's see where Prabhupada takes this book distribution experience. To the next slide, number 8. Yeah. Through Sukadeva Goswami's grace and by the mercy of Maharaj Parikrit, we are all given Srimad Bhagavatam perpetually to learn the science of the absolute personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. Yeah. So Prabhupada's purport is pretty simple. He's kind of like, and just kind of just taking the text and opening it up a little bit, yeah, and making this point that everything's kind of finished now. And with this conversation, with this dialogue with Brahma, with Vishnu, and of course this is all in answer to Maharaj Pariksit's questions in the last chapter, and his questions about what did Narada teach? How does living in, did he get entangled in this world? And other questions about what is the position of the Supreme Lord, his form, and these kind of things like that. Is his form different than our form, just by size, or is it different in some kind of quality? And Sukadeva Goswami is answering by citing, you know, the Lord's version, how Krishna answered these questions himself by showing his form. Which, you know, so then let's look at the next slides, and what I've done there is just kind of summarize the text number 9. So text number 9 is Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.31-44. The personality of Godhead said, knowledge about me, as described in the scriptures, is very confidential. Okay, in the Vedas. Aha. And it has to be realized in conjunction with devotional service. Interesting. The necessary paraphernalia for that process is being explained by me. You may take it up carefully. So we can't realize Krishna without serving him. That strikes right at the root of the problem in the beginning. Because the root of the problem is motivation, according to our perspective. It's not what you know, it's why you know it. It's not what you do, but why you do it. And so, without devotional service, you know, one cannot realize this confidential knowledge. And then Krishna goes on to say, all of me, namely my actual eternal form and my transcendental existence, you know, color, qualities, and activities, let all be awakened within you by factual realization out of my causeless mercy. And then the Chaturshloki, Brahma, it is I, the personality of Godhead, who was existing before the creation, when there was nothing but myself. Nor was there the material nature, the cause of this creation. That which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead. And after annihilation, what remains will also be I, the personality of Godhead. O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, yet if it is not in relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. Okay, next slide, number 10. O Brahma, please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created. At the same time, I am outside of everything. A person who is searching after the Supreme Absolute Truth, the personality of Godhead, most certainly search for it up to this. In all circumstances, in all space and time, both directly and indirectly. So kind of insert here, I've been listening to the classes here, and of course, Maharaj did a superhuman feat of reading the entire text. Purport really should have been broken up, it seemed, that one. The other ones maybe, but that one, my goodness, yeah. And then the content, too, there's so much, topics and that are being discussed, and they're not being broken into categories like that so much. It seems like there's so much work to do in analytical analysis of Prabhupada's purports. I have a suspicion Prabhupada can quite easily keep in his mind that he's talking about one topic and then another and then another. And as we're discussing, sometimes the paragraph breaks in the wrong places. He probably didn't put them in. But for us, we don't really actually see now another topic's being brought up and that fits in relation to this topic, So one question in my mind kept coming up is, what does it mean both directly and indirectly? And as much as I was able to scan the purport, it seemed to be saying that indirectly is the Varnashram system, And by following this, Brahmana Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra and then Sannyas, actually come to understanding the absolute truth by going through this whole Varna Ashram system, and the investigation evolves, and the meditation contemplation of the external feature, the Bharat Rup, and then the yoga, and the directly is through parampara, like that. Just what I was trying to understanding here. Of course, all these are open for discussion in a few minutes. O Brahma, just follow this conclusion. So the conclusion is that it's Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is there beginning, middle, and end, who appears to enter in but doesn't enter in. And if we see anything without relationship to him, it has no reality. Okay? Well, Brahma, just follow this conclusion by fixed concentration of mind. Okay? And no pride will disturb you, neither in the partial nor in the final devastation. So, of course, people are pointing out that this is Brahma's question, right? He wants to understand how Krishna is creating everything so he can do his job properly. And somebody pointed this out, Ramanandaji, that when some company gives you a requirement, they give you the specifications of what they want. I forgot the Japanese fellow's name, but they gave him the specifications of what they wanted for their main fighter plane, the Zero, how much it had to weigh, what it had to do, like that. So understanding what they were going to use it for and everything else, he then created that, the Zero, which is a very interesting fighter plane. So Brahma's trying to stay in touch with Krishna and understand how he's giving him the Shakti. But then also he has this fear that engaging in this Sankirtan, that he's going to have this problem of associating with these nasty things. So here it says he's answering specifically because Krishna can describe himself in so many ways, But here he's describing himself, and it seems to be saying here, especially, he's describing himself in terms of this problem. You'll always be able to see me. You'll always be able to see the transcendental aspect of myself. But then it's a little confusing to me, neither in the partial nor in the final devastation. I didn't have a chance to research that. Because it seems that Brahma would be more concerned about falling in Maya, during the manifestations. And when these things are manifested and becoming confused. But maybe that doesn't matter so much as long as we go to bed with a peaceful mind during the partial manifestation. And we, what's the other one? And then we die, with a peaceful mind in the final devastation. So another point, directly and indirectly, and now also partial and final devastations. Sukadeva Goswami said to Maharaj, Pariksit, The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, after being seen in his transcendental form instructing Brahmaji, the leader of living entities, disappeared. On disappearance, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, who is the object of transcendental enjoyment for the senses of devotees, Brahma, with folded hands, began to recreate the universe, full with living entities, as it was previously. So we go to slide number 11, if you please. Thus, once upon a time, the forefather of living entities and the father of religiousness, Lord Brahma, situated himself in acts of regulative principles, desiring self-interest for the welfare of all living entities. Yeah. So thus, once upon a time, does that mean Sukadeva Goswami is taking a step back and looking at the whole encounter? And then he's describing what happened, how he situated himself in acts of regulative principles, desiring self-interest for the welfare of all living entities? Or does it mean that after he saw Vishnu? So in the purport, we should answer that question later on. Then there seems to be a break, and it says, Narada, now we're moving on. Okay, Narada, the most dear of the inheritor sons of Brahma, always ready to serve his father strictly, follows the instructions of his father by his mannerly behavior, meekness, and sense control. Narada, the most dear of the inheritor sons of Brahma, most dear, always ready to serve his father, strictly follows the instructions of his father by his mannerly behavior, meekness, and sense control. Narada very much pleased his father and desired to know all about the energies of Vishnu, the master of all energies. For Narada was the greatest of all sages and the greatest of all devotees, O King. The great sage Narada also inquired in detail from his father, Brahma, the great grandfather of all the universe, after seeing him well satisfied. Thereupon, the supplementary literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, which was described by the personality of Godhead and which contains 10 characteristics, was told with great satisfaction by the father, Brahma, to his son, Narada. Then after that, it will go on then to describe the Bhagavatam in more details, like how many topics are included in it, like that. You know? So kind of including the content of the Bhagavatam. And then after this, we have one more chapter. Then the sages at the end of this canto will ask about the conversation between Maitreya and Vidura, which then takes up a lot of the Bhagavatam from this point on, you know, our very means of conquest. And again, it will discuss this point of creation of the universe, the universe and elements, like that. And maybe also come to the point of discussing Krishna's position in Dwarka, like that, which hasn't been revealed at this point, you know, and our relationship with him. Okay. So that this is the end of the purport and end of our perspective on the text. And for the slide number 12, we have a little bit more perspective we added here. Okay. And that's our perspective from our Sankirtan work, like that. We're trying to also do something, trying to disseminate this knowledge, following these things, coming down from Brahma to Narada, to Vyasadeva, to Sukadeva Goswami, Maharaj Parikshit and Sudha Goswami, to Sudha Goswami, the sages of Naimisharanya, and the sages of Naimisharanya, on down to Lord Chaitanya, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada, and Vidugdadas, and also Hanapresha Swami, Ramananda, all of ourselves. You know. Yeah. So, the idea is that we should try and broadcast this, you know? And it's interesting because in the Bhagavatam, I think the usual broadcasting program goes on when somebody approaches somebody and asks for knowledge. Usually the formula is the sages of Naimisharanya have a problem. Narada Muni has a problem. Brahma has a problem. Vyasadeva has a problem. And Maharaj Pariksit has a problem. And then it's usually they approach an authority, or the authority is conveniently present, or even he shows up at that point, you know, and then they ask their questions, you know. But Lord Chaitanya's movement is more aggressive, that he goes out and tries to preach to people, to inspire them, you know, with this knowledge, whether they want it or not. So a little difference in the approach of the Bhagavatam and in Lord Chaitanya's movement. We're trying to read the Chaitanya Charitamrita every day before Mangal Arati. I think it's a nice time. And right now, Lord Chaitanya has come back from his tour, and he's giving residences to all the Vaishnavas who've come, and he gives a residence to Haridas Thakur. And so Haridas Thakur, of course, doesn't even want to go near the temple like that. And so it's Prabhupada says that Lord Chaitanya, of course, could have taken him to the temple, you know, but Prabhupada says he didn't want to disturb social custom. Yeah. And also, of course, he took sannyas in the Mayavadi Sampradaya. So it's interesting that Lord Chaitanya is reaching out to people who aren't asking him to come. But at the same time, too, it seems like these two incidents kind of indicate that he's not doing it in a way which agitates people. But then we come to Lord Nityananda. He's the great agitator. Like that. So he's even more merciful than Lord Chaitanya. You know? So trying to follow it, fit into this whole thing, I think we end up more like along the lines of Haridas Thakur than Nityananda. And it may have to do, because everybody's different. You know, I was an only child, pretty much. My father had two children by his first wife, who was apparently gone crazy. You know? And he got remarried later. So, but they were much older than I was, maybe like about 5 years or something. Yeah. So I had brother and sister sometimes. But I see that when you grow up with brothers and sisters, it seems to be much more you relate to people and you argue and stuff and carry on, you know. But I have a very deep within me kind of like some reticence and, you know, dealing with people, maybe because of that. Okay, so everybody's got a particular psychosocial nature. And so we're also trying to preach and everything else, you know. So as you know, we're kind of working on Carl Jung, and that led us to the Carl Jung journals. There's several very active journals, Spring Journal of Analytical Psychology, and several of them. Then we found one interesting article by the director of training, therapist training in Zurich, and that led us to the Kundalini lectures by Jung, which were given in 1932. In cooperation with one professor, Hauer, I think it was German thought, like that. And then one, Sonu Shamdashini, he then published a book, which is available on Amazon, and we bought it through the Kindle format, downloaded it to get it right away for $10. Yeah. He wrote the a book on the Kundalini lectures, you know. And also his name has shown up before. He's like our Sankirtan people were trying to preach to and go meet and communicate our ideas to. He showed up as the editor of the Red Book when it was finally released, which was Jung's private journal, which was never released until just a few years ago. Because his children were afraid, grandchildren were afraid, people would think he was psychotic. But now as things are going on, most of us don't think he was psychotic. He was just dealing with, you know, subtle realities. You know, although some people still say, oh, he had a psychotic breakdown, like that. So you look in the Wikipedia for Sonu Shamdashini. He was born in 1952, which means he's 4 years older than myself. He was born in Singapore. Singapore? I think so, yeah. And he went to India looking for a guru, and that's when he started reading Carl Jung. So this is a very, I think, very like indicative, because here's a good preaching perspective, and other people from their efforts have found something else. So exchanging notes here about disseminating Brahma's knowledge, that this is what happens. People are looking for a guru, and they come across, many times they come across Carl Jung. He's still quite active in publication in his perspectives. And then reading this, so then I went into this Kundalini yoga thing and downloaded it. And the preface he gives is just incredible. Such a nice, intelligent person describing the whole events in 1932. And from that, so many citations from many years before that, there was a very big effort by Western people, not just us, to try to enlarge their knowledge by their contact with yoga and Indian philosophy and culture. You know? And of course, Jung was very much into this. He was very much that India was India and China. You know, we're like children, you know, compared to India and China in terms of introspective knowledge that I was developing. And he went there one time, got 5 honorary PhDs, and another person went with him. The British government sent him there for the 25th anniversary of the University of Calcutta, like that, so on. You know? So it's very interesting. You know, I'm thinking, oh, they know nothing about this and that, but looking at it, it's been, I don't know how long, you know, maybe like 1890s or something, because the psychology was beginning at that point. So at least in the psychology level, we can start talking about how you're not just the gross body and these kind of things, and people laughing about reincarnation and laughing about, you know, karma and yoga. No, these are people who, you know, who are, believe in the subtle body and these kind of things and their importance in the world like that, you know. And of course, Jung was taking it beyond the karma level of rituals and formal external activities, and beyond the Gyan level of just like analytical knowledge and algebra and grammar and arithmetic, you know, this Gyan level, to actually the level of contemplation, and Dhyan, of meditation and things like that. And 1932, you know, 2022, 2022, 2012, so this was 80 years ago. 80 years ago. And trying to see how they were understanding the topics they were preaching and what they were dealing with and trying to understand the yoga and how much of it they understood. And it's also very interesting. You have to look at the date when Shonursham Dashni wrote his article here. And I think it wasn't much later than... He cites everything like 2000, maybe 2004, latest, I think even before that even. You know? So the position of Srila Prabhupada, the atmosphere for preaching in these environments and things like that. You know? I think now Srila Prabhupada is being accepted as a safe personality among scholars. Not everybody, from people. But before he was just, you know, terror on wheels. Even if you mention Prabhupada in the most deprecatory negative terms on earth, it was not considered a good thing to do. You know, it was the P word. We don't say the P word like that. You mean Prabhupada? Oh my God! So he said the P word. You know, and even if it was, you know, Prabhupada is completely what's the word, like narrow-minded? What's it called? Born again Hindu? Blah blah blah. You know, even just to mention him. And it was terrifying, you know. So, but now it's coming to the point, and I think mostly it's because of comportment. The devotees have gradually made their way, you know, by following the game, playing the game, into very, very respected positions in academic structure. Tamal Krishnamurti's book and different devotees are in big universities. And they haven't rocked the boat. They haven't disturbed the social environment. You know, Lord Chaitanya in his preaching to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Prakashananda Saraswati, in all these cases, he did the same thing. He followed the etiquette and took the humble position. But when people asked him, what's your opinion, then he didn't deviate. He didn't become rude or anything. But then he presented it, and they asked, you know, sincerely. And so he then presented his philosophy, an idea like that, in a respectful sense. And of course, he defeated Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, argued. I think Prakashananda Saraswati, there's no record of him arguing in Varanasi. It is kind of accepted, maybe a few questions like that, you know, but different times. So preaching strategies, that's what we're doing. We're going on here in the, I've got this to the preface now of the book. Now, Because it appears that Jung is going to try and compare his archetypal images, you know, that exist everywhere in the subconscious. We probably would like the term subconscious. He didn't like the term unconscious, and neither did Jung. Yeah? So these archetypal structures, forms. Again, Kant had the idea much earlier that all we're going to see is just like geometric, logical, you know, forms that exist everywhere, which allow us to experience the sensory world. But Nietzsche and Goethe and then Jung were starting to come to the point of personal forms that always exist like that. So that's what we've been doing, and I'm trying to think in terms of these, you know, instructions to Brahma and everything else. And the emphasis is on this, on personality. And of course, here Prabhupada is defining this term personality, especially working in the area that is conscious. So very, very simple to start with like that. And then going broader, again, the Virat Roop, if we're saying that what Jung was actually contacting and talking about in his own techniques of introspection was the Virat Roop, then we're going to find that the Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra are archetypes, you know? And, of course, reading his other books. You know? So this is the one perspective we have on preaching. You have to listen. What's his name? Our Silent Cal, Calvin Coolidge. And Calvin Coolidge said, he was very famous for not saying much. He said, nobody ever listened to himself out of a job like that. One time, President Coolidge was at a presidential dinner, and as usual, like some senators, you know, daughters or wives, you know, were next to him. I think he was a single guy, even. I don't know. And so the idea was you're supposed to talk to the girl on your left during the first half of dinner and the girl to your right in the second half of dinner. And the girl on his left, she's a daughter of some senator, she said, President Coolidge, my girlfriend bet me $100, which in those days is a lot of money, that I couldn't get you to say more than two words to me during the entire dinner. You know, what do you say? And Coolidge responded, you lose. I never said anything ever again to her during the entire dinner. So Silent Cal, you know, said you can never talk yourself out of a job. So I guess you can never talk yourself and say never listen yourself out of a job. So you can never listen yourself out of a successful, you know, Sankirtan experience like that. So try to listen to people, understand what their perspective is, and also what their authorities are, who their authorities are, and then put things in their language, and then we build a bridge. And so many bridges needed. But this is what we've been working on, which is just natural for us, you know, for my nature, you know, so on. I think maybe, I don't know, it seems so far it's worthwhile we're meeting. So far we're meeting a nice number of people, and a nice community like that. Okay. That's kind of our summary of Brahma, Lord Brahma and Krishna disappearing, and Lord Brahma engaging in Sankirtan, and it coming on down to us. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions, comments, complaints?
No. Do you think you could ever get through to the Jungians that Krishna is the archetype?
Well, that's
Krishna's form, and yeah. Because they're so close, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, so many people that also are in Bhakti Purnavidya Maharaj, Russian Bhakti Vigya Maharaj. He also very enthused by this area.
Me too.
But the thing is, what I'm encountering so far, I'm just touching the iceberg here, is that there are quite a few different varieties of Jungian,
huh? Uh-huh.
But it's a very, very living group. And they have a lot of clients and stuff who deal with them. They don't just deal with sick people.
Huh.
A lot of their psychology is also actualization workshops, and it's a nice community. And I think some people, as I said, some people will like it, some people will want to understand it, and some people will hate it.
Yeah. Did you ever see how Jung drew a simple sketch of what he thought a realized soul would look like?
Oh, I didn't know about that, no.
It looks like Prabhupada.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
It looks
it's
like
it's interesting because it's interesting. He left his body, right, like 1962 or something.
Yeah.
Right before Prabhupada came in. In many ways, they say this, you know, the philosophers, that 70% of the field of activities that Prabhupada used, they didn't say that, but in this, 70% of the environment that Prabhupada was able to take advantage of was Jung's production. You know?
I don't understand. 70% of environment? What?
Yeah, because if you look at all the people that created the whole hippie movement, the whole counterculture movement, the whole New Age movement, Timothy Leary, what's his name, Abby Hoffman, you know, Jerry Rubens, all these people writing and creating the whole thing, the musicians. Jung's culture, philosophy, everything, ideas are just, you know, pervasive like that. And so he in some ways created the ambience that we were able to use and stuff like that. Other things too, you know, war in Vietnam didn't do. But so, you know, so I don't know, what maybe Jung took birth again after that.
As
he would have been.
Who? Let's find him.
Yeah, maybe. He left his body 62. Okay, maybe like anybody born after 63 years old.
9 months after his death.
Yeah. Anybody born after 1963. It's gone. Could be Carl Jung.
Well, seeing if there are any Matajis with smoke pipes.
Or who have kids who speak German, spontaneously speak German.
But there was is he impersonal? Does he want to merge? Or is he, because he's so personal, that of the archetypes, that there anything here, that's what we say. Everything that is here is originally present in the spiritual world.
Or at least in the Virat Roop. I mean, that's just kind of, but as far as he was going, you know.
Oh. All right, so he's like a Brahmavadi. Hmm? Brahmanandi.
His biography is very, very nice. He talks about it, lays it on the line, what he thinks about it. And he didn't let it be published until after he died.
Yeah.
So therefore, you can kind of assume he's just telling people, like, what it is, you know. The very last thing he talks about, death, and he's, but Prabhupada hit on this thing of evolution, you know.
Hmm.
And even he is like, has this feeling that, you know, evolution is going on, we're evolving, but he says, my life is an investigation. I did not come to any real hard conclusions about this and that. And so he's saying that I'm not gonna just like pretend that we live forever just because it's a convenient thing. But at the same time too, he said there's no real reason to reject it. And all my evidence tends to support an idea that there is, you know, something to the self, which definitely goes beyond this gross body and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that's level.
If they go to the Kundalini, you know, eventually they're going to want to merge.
Yeah. Yeah. That's. But Jung directly rejects that.
Wow.
Directly, he says that. He says the Indian philosophy and all he had was this impersonalism and this Buddhism. He didn't come across Vaishnavas.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I don't like this Indian idea of the self and the ego being eliminated. Yeah, this is really this is what the investigation is.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what it means and what it is at the top. He even says the Kundalini, he talks about the top two chakras. And he says, nobody in the West is ever going to achieve this, and even India, they have a hard time achieving it, so I'm not going to even talk about it that much, you know, in terms of the higher levels of consciousness. So I think it's very open. And then we're talking to, like, Shodusham Dashini and people like that, well, what's their consciousness?
See, 12th canto is where it's described, it's called Vaishnava Tantra, that every part of Krishna's body generates something here. See, that's tantra means bodily salvation through body. Our body bhakti is like that.
So, is it a certain part of the 12th canto?
Madan, are you there? What chapter is called Vaishnava Tantra?
I don't know right offhand. Thank you.
We pay you to know. You know, you gave me.
What are you paying you for?
You Vaishnav know,
but Tantra, it's called?
Tantra. Vaishnava Tantra.
Okay.
Look at the
wonder.
The database doc.
His eyes. This is different than the universal form, see?
Yeah.
That, like his mouth of the Brahmins and so. This is that his eye generates every kind of vision and every form of, therefore there must be form. His ear generates the Akash, therefore sound. You know, but not that he is. And he is still.
Second and third canto, yeah. That goes on into the fourth canto.
We can go to that.
That's what I was thinking. As things go on, then trying to relate the Virat Rupa and so on to the...
They would love that. Unless they're stuck on the impersonal, unless they're trapped in... Where did Young hear about or learn Kundalini, though? From any Indian gurus, or he avoided the gurus?
No.
I think in another lecture you said he didn't really approach any gurus.
No, his description, and actually Sham Darshani, he says one other person went with him, and he also kept a diary, and he adds that they visited a lot of Kali temples. Of course, this was 1935 or something.
Oh,
everywhere was filth, dried blood, dried beetle nut spit. So, but Jung's reaction was he got dysentery and they had to take him to the hospital and save his life.
Because maybe, uninitiated, you dabble in these things, you're going to get sick or worse.
So he said, Jung's conclusion partly was that after seeing this, he thought that he came to the conclusion that destruction wasn't evil. It was part of reality and could be accepted like that and stuff. But that's it. He didn't. And Bhaktisiddhanta was there. Bhaktisiddhanta was relating to the University of Calcutta at that time. He was. That's the whole thing. Interesting. What he came in contact. What he didn't come in contact. What he wanted to come in contact with. But anyway, there's a whole history, and it's somebody Lord so and so, translated quite a few things, and then Hachior, the German fellow here, went to India as a missionary, with a straight sense of converting the Hindus. But he saw everything there. He says, no, these people are far more advanced than we are. And then he took translations of the, I think he spoke Sanskrit. He didn't speak Sanskrit. Mm-hmm. So that was the whole purpose of the lecture series, which was very, very controlled. They had 60 seats. Pure would draw about 40, and Jung was overpacked. And people, Nobel laureates had to beg permission to be allowed to join the things like that. Mm-hmm. And so then they joined it, and Hure then apparently gave the whole, his description, it was a translation of one section by one 15th, 16th century Swamiji of a tantric description of the chakras, and he gave it his description. And then Jung then, from his side, then compared them to the perspective that had been developing in the analytical psychology. Okay.
So I think he kind of maybe lacked humility that I am Dr. PhD psychiatrist, so I'm not going to accept a guru. I'm not going to sit at someone's feet and be taught. I'm going to take this stuff and go back and be famous.
And also he was eating meat and smoking a pipe, like you said.
Oh, that can follow him. I think it's just too proud. Because that was the style, you go to India and then you come back and say, I found the enlightened one. Where is he? Well, he went back to the Himalayas, and he taught me this and this. The same thing with Baba Ramdas and Neem Karoli Baba. And even Ramakrishna. Prabhupada told me, here's a simple Kali priest. But they made all these things about him based on Lord Chaitanya's life. The Vaishnavas have a devotee who had ecstasies, and then they say he is avatar, so we're going to make a Kali Advaita Shankara Advaita avatar out of this. Let's find somebody. Okay, here's it. Hey, you. Me? Yeah. And he would have catatonic experiences, and they called them samadhi. In the back, this is outrageous, in the back of every gospel of Sri Ramakrishna book, even the abridged one and the big one, there's a synopsis of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life.
The bed where he died.
Yeah.
Where he left his body. Mm-hmm. All along the walls, they have these little tilted pictures like they have in India. And the one right at the foot of his bed is, Lord Chaitanya's picture. Like that. He left his body looking at Lord Chaitanya's picture.
Whoa. Is that Dakineshwara?
Professor I was with wanted to talk to the predominating acharya there, so I just went over to the chapel. It's very beautiful, but it's very small. So I went to chanting, and this thought was coming in my mind. Well, Srila Prabhupada, what do you think about Ramakrishna? Like, I got this kind of impression of Prabhupada saying, "Here's my countryman." The only thing Prabhupada would give him, other than that, you can see no other good quality.
Well, I'm working with Yogeshwar. Yogeshwar's writing his memoir book, and we come to the point when Kirtanananda tells Prabhupada, "Ramakrishna was right."
Oh my God.
Prabhupada, it was like slowly he turns. And he slams his box, the metal box, with his hand. "Why do you say that?" I went to Dakineshwar with Prabhupada's cousin. He gave me the tour. Behind the temple, there was still a big wooden short fork. That's where they sacrifice goats. Now, I heard they took that out.
Oh, my goodness.
I heard they took that out.
Yeah.
And they no longer do goat sacrifice there, but...
I think it decreased a lot in Bengal, my experience. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't mean they don't eat meat, though.
Yeah, chicken, morgi.
And goat, but they just like... I put it briefly in my book, but others are saying you take out the animal sacrifice, now you just get your meat in cellophane. So one has religious sacrificial experience or process, and the other is just killing.
Yeah.
That's what Prabhupada said. I said, well, who is better, the Jewish and Christian, Judeo-Christian, Almighty God, or Kali worshiper? He said, the Kali worshiper. I said, Baba, what? And he said, because the Vedic system is designed, if you want to eat meat, it will bring you from Tamagun to Rajagun to Satugun. The Vedic system is arranged that way. A misconception. People are calling this satanic worship Tantra. And it's not. This is Yavana black yuck. Yes, someone else wanted to. I've been taking up all this time. I've been tapping his brain too long now. And someone else has a question?
Comment. Complaint.
All right.
Tantric experience.
In looking up the that nutshell verse you were quoting about directly and indirectly, in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on that verse, he describes it as directly means sadhana, and indirectly means those things that won't deliver prema bhakti to you. Sadhana is that which it's known by what it does. It's to deliver you to prema bhakti, and that's directly. And indirectly is that it won't do it. So that was just an interesting idea, because he seems to point to like etavad eva, this etavad, meant up to prema. So one who's searching out after the absolute truth has to search it out up to prema. And those things that will deliver prema, that's directly. And those things that won't was indirectly. That's the way
Indirectly, though, they can be useful to bring you to a certain level, huh?
That's why not. Like in 12th chapter, Krishna says to Arjuna, surrender to me completely. If you can't do that, practice the sadhana. If you can't do that, do your duty. If you can't do that, so there's less and less. But it's in the process. The process will... Then Prabhupada, after talking about Kali to me, he said, "Kshipram bhavati dharma," very quickly they will be elevated. Okay.
Well, also in the 34 where it says, rite ritam, it doesn't have any value, he says, if it's not connected. So you have to connect it in order for it to have value. If it's not connected, it's a reflection. And then, of course, yesterday we were having some fun with reflection, because afterwards I was thinking Amira and pride and Amira and vanity, are all those, they're all kind of like the same ideas, because Spirit, I was texting back and forth to Nahari, and it came to me. I could ask everybody what they think of it, but it's because Lord Chaitanya, he specifically, like with the talks with Ramananda Roy, he says if it's external, he wasn't interested in it. He was interested in internal things that are on the basis of love. So when he says it has no value, I was saying it has no value for developing rasa. It's, and pride's like I thought of a term called a rasa blocker. It's blocking you from developing your relationship with Krishna, which is what it's all about, is having these loving exchanges. And if it doesn't give you the loving exchange, if it can't produce that, it's just a reflection. It really doesn't have any value, that it, because it, what good is it if you can't get rasa from it? What do you think?
But the Varnashram system, which I was reading as the indirect method, it doesn't bring you to rasa. But the conclusion of Varnashram is finally to take sannyas and do austerities, come in contact with the Paramatma, and the Paramatma, you know, then will take you bahunam jamanam ante genamam mam papajante. You know? So it's an indirect method, and, you know, in this age, you know, forget it. You know?
Well, it was just because a lot of times the conversation would come up in that, talking about Lord Chaitanya, why he would say, that's external, go on if you have something more. And it seemed to be the conclusion was, because of Lord Chaitanya's particular mood, Krishna and the mood of Radharani, that he was kind of exclusive in what he was looking for. I mean, even like his talks with the Tatmavadis and his Prema Pumarta Mahan, his goal, you know, he says these other four goals, Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. But then he says, no, it's Prema. So Lord Chaitanya seemed to have, I don't know if it's a correct way to say, he had a one-track mind. He was always thinking about loving Krishna in the mood of Radharani, and that was, you know, the, his Gauravani. And then, of course, when you, you kind of think about it, after we read the, these nutshell verses, especially that 35 after you, and you hook that into Uddhava's discussion with the gopis, you can kind of get nearer to where Lord Jagannath is. You know, Jagannath, Jagannath, the Lord of the universe. And we always sing, you know, for Ratyaja Jagannatha Swami, Narayana Patakami Bhava Tume. So, how is it that one sees the Lord of the universe in everything? And just that whole continuation, of course, Lord Jagannath, he's thinking of Krishna in Vrindavan in such, in the gopis and the whole environment there so much that he goes into such an ecstatic Mahabhava Prakash form. And that's actually the Lord of the universe is Lord Jagannath. This separation from remembering the pastimes of Braj. And of course, the whole Prabhupada instituted that Jagannath festival, Rath Yatra festival, so we can all assist in bringing that consciousness and getting all that agyata sukriti of bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan. That's in the mood of Radharani. Anyway, that was thought I had on the subject. Sorry.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
But Madan, you're a great philosopher, you know, but if you got a day job, keep it.
What is it? I heard the first
I'm joking there. About the big four. About the big four.
What's the big four?
The big four is where you used to work, right?
Oh, big one.
Big one, is that what it was?
Yeah, it's called Big One Appliance.
Oh, okay,
yeah. Yeah.
I can't imagine you coming in to repair my refrigerator.
I had some fun conversations with these. There's a big community up there called the Ananda community.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd be in there fixing his refrigerator, and the fellow says, how can you be discussing this philosophy and at the same time fixing my refrigerator and not missing? I had some. Had a lot of fun at different times when you come into these Ananda houses and You know, they're
like these guys, all the Sanskrit scholars selling betel nuts and all the stuff. Okay. Wait, 11:15 here. I guess I should go. And I guess, you know, some more. Boy, you keep on reading. My main experience is I wonder, what have I got to offer people in terms of Sankirtan? And I really think what I've got to offer them is I get up early and I chant my rounds every day. The four principles. And that gives me some kind of individual personal experience, which I definitely can contribute. We all can contribute something. That is just, you know, everybody by nature. And so that's it, getting up early, chanting rounds, everything else like that, so on. And beyond that, the Bhagavatam and everything else, oh, you know, that's so profound.
Paresh, can you hear me?
No.
Yes, I can hear you, whoever you are.
Hold on. Hold on 1 second. Anyway, Barrett. Thank you very much for a nice class. Was there anything else anyone had?
Let's give it to him as a gift.
Oh boy, too much choice. Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay, Hare Krishna, all glory to the Prabhupada.
All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
And remember, Krishna is everywhere.
Alright, he's going to have to lay down for me to do it. I don't know.
Thank you. Jai Jagannath.
Right.
Wait, I got to pack stuff still.